You are listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth.
Hey, hello everybody, this is JP, it's Journeys with JP, and I've just run over from the other studio. It's about 400 yards away, so you have no idea how fast I have to run, almost at sublight speed. So tonight, well, yeah, it's 5 p.m. PST, so it's kind of early evening, and actually it's very late, it's 1 o'clock in the morning for me, and for my guest, it is, what time is it over there, Sir Walt? Walt? Are you there? Have I lost you already? Oh well. Now, I do presume that I'm still on the air because all my stations are still connected. Yes, so that's good. But I don't know where Walt has gone. Let me just reconnect. What's happened? He'll be right back. Well, anyway, I'll do some maintenance. So first of all, there you are. He'll be back. We're listening
Sorry.
To Rev. That's okay. I'll just do a station maintenance. We are on Revolution Radio, Studio B, and Wolf Spirit Radio, simulcasting as we speak. We, are all listener supported stations. Wolf Spirit Radio is a subscriber-supported station, and Revolution Radio is a listener-supported station, which means you can buy things off them, or rather you donate a certain amount and you get a kind of gift back. That's another way of looking at it. So there's a special offer this month, is that if you buy a if you give us $50, now that's not very much. He will send you a silver dollar, which in very short years to come will be worth a lot more than $50. Let me tell you, brothers and sisters. Especially the Canadians. If you can get Canadian dollars, they're very nice because you can make colloidal silver with it. And so, segueing nicely from colloidal to Walter. Walt Silver, how are you? You're there finally.
Hello there.
Hey.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. Shaman, magician, thing builder.
Thing builder. Oh, that's very Monty Python.
Yeah, unit.
Thing here. The thingies. The maker of thingies.
The maker of things. Yeah. What do you call them? New paradigm tools. That's what you call them, don't you?
Yeah. Because in the new paradigm, we have to learn how to play with energy. We can't be asleep about this whole energy issue because it's all energy. Little by little, people are waking up to the fact that pay attention how your energy is being used to make things for others. I mean, if you are, for example, if you look at documents like currency bills, birth certificates, they're all chock full of symbology and magical symbols because it's all, you know, based on old Babylonian magic. And that's a way to harness and use energy. You had Simon on the show on Sunday and he spoke of, you know, these folks that are so sociopathic and violent and foment wars everywhere. They use it. Every time somebody dies, there's such a tremendous release of energy and they use that for their stuff. So, that's the new paradigm. It's time to, if they can do that using our energy, it's about time that we use what we need, we do what we need to do using our own energy and telling them, you know, go sit on it because I'm not letting you use my energy anymore.
Yeah. And this is the thing, you know, because we've heard for many years, you know, oh, don't give your power away. Don't give your energy away. And It's very, very subtle. It's very, very subtle, Walt. You know, what does it mean to give your power away?
Can we point out the very obvious one?
Yeah, go on. The very obvious one.
The most obvious one is like, I just had this case. You know Jessica.
Mm-hmm.
And Jessica has a client friend
mm-hmm.
who was referred to me to do a shamanic journey.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, you know, somebody comes from left field telling this lady all sorts of horrible things. And I said to her, well, at all times you're sitting at the center of your reality. So nothing can affect you without your consent. So the minute that you believe this person, even a little tiny bit, that door that you open, believing in what he said, is your implicit consent to what he's trying to tell you, the bill of goods that he's trying to tell you. So if you withdraw your consent from whatever it is he's trying to say, well, that whatever he's trying to sell will not touch your reality. You're withdrawing the consent, which is the proper way of doing it. Somebody did a Facebook post with an article regarding that, and it is very, very true. A lot of people say, I do not consent. Well, all you're doing is non-action. Okay, you're not consenting. Well, what about the stuff you're consenting to? So when faced with something that you disagree with, the correct thing is I withdraw my consent with this because I don't agree with it. So you're essentially declaring that you're removing your energy, whatever energy is required for you to sustain this manifestation or phenomena, whatever it is that you're not agreeing with. So that's one of the most subtle ways when you're in front of somebody and they're selling you an idea. That's it. Another perfect example, the used car salesman or the car salesman. You know, somebody goes to the car dealership. They just need four wheels and a metal box to get them from home, you know, from home to work and back and forth, right? They don't need a Formula One sports car. They don't need a rocket to the moon. They just need something to get around. But as soon as that salesman begins to work up things and details and stuff like that, and he starts selling you on the idea of something bigger, more powerful, more expensive, that's your consent. As long as you're listening and he's taking you on this mental trip of how fantastic it would be to have this, that's your consent, and he's using your energy.
Yes, because here's the thing, what you're paying him, and, you know, it's in the words, you're paying him your attention. Your attention Correct. Is the most precious thing that you have. And if you can Yep. apply focused attention, you can achieve great things, can't you?
Yeah.
And so,
and it's the same as, it's like your memory. I've spoken to you about in the past about human design, you know, when people have the open head center and open ajna center, their attention is not constant. But what they don't explain, this is what I had to explain to the people when I tell them about that, is that yes, it is true. You should not be swearing on your memory for anything because chances are you're not remembering it correctly. But your ability to recall something precisely is directly proportional to the attention you paid to that subject. So if you were looking at something, a book, a movie, whatever it was, a discussion somewhere, and it totally enthralled you and it touched your passion and it got your attention, you will remember that for years to come. That's why I can quote books that I read 30 years ago because I was loving what I was reading. But if you ask me what I read 5 minutes ago, chances are I don't remember anything.
Exactly. I have a perfect example of that is I have amnesia from a 3-week period when I had a motorcycle crash 30 years ago. But the one thing that I do remember from the day that it happened was and it was a point of focused attention. I was placing a decal, the side of a motorbike has got a little panel, a little rounded panel. It was an old bike, and it had 500 on the side of it. And I just got a new one because the old one was plastic and cracked. So that day I was placing it very carefully, to be, exactly in the right center, to be in the right orientation. And I put a lot of focus into that when I applied the sticker. and that's the only thing that I remember from that whole 3 week period.
Wow. The rest just went off.
Boom.
Well, this is a bad memory. Let me flush it.
Yeah. Yes. No good. This one hurt too much. Yeah. But it's very interesting because as you were speaking just then, me old war wound, the actual injury started throbbing on my arm. And that's the place where it got, my arm got broken, against the pillar of a car.
So you got hit on the side by the other vehicle?
No, I was on a bike and he turned in front of me. So his car was broadside to me. And so I then, attempted to leave. I thought I better fly. So I dumped the bike in some sort of heroic manner. Went splat against the side of the windscreen, you know, where the windscreen meets the door, you know, like the hardest part of the car.
Yeah, the pillar.
So I hit the pillar. And that broke my arm and that broke my ribs and the ribs cut through my liver and that's why I died. Yes.
So it's about time that you released all that energy. There's no need to be holding on to it.
That's right. Well, there's a lot of shock there and I've been holding on to it. And what's interesting is the Nung, the famous Nung has been kind of holding that vibration. So as it's coming out, as I'm layer by layer denunging myself with borax. It's great, folks. Oh. It's really working. I have to tell you, I'm looking in the mirror and thinking, wow, you're really actually losing weight. You're not obese anymore.
Well, I remember you gave me the recipe for it.
Yeah.
I had to use tape because I made the dilution in a glass bottle. So using tape, I attached to the side of the bottle one of the Shungite magnets. And as time passed, the solution would get sweeter and sweeter. I mean, you would, right now, if I tasted it right now, you would think that it was made with sugar.
Wow.
How sweet the dilution of a borax tastes. Because in the beginning, it really doesn't taste like much. It's not unpleasant. It just doesn't taste like much.
In the beginning. very interesting.
As time passed, now it tastes sweet.
Right. Cause there is, it's like, to me, it's like, very sweet and very fishy at the same time. It's like one of those, if you go to the Chinese or Indian supermarkets, they have these bags of dried flattened fish that stink to high heaven.
Like cod?
Sometimes tiny little, smaller than sprats. You know, what the heck do they do with these things? You know, they're fish the size of prawns, almost krill. You know.
Isn't there a, correct maybe, I don't know if I'm remembering correct. Isn't there something that they do that's like a flour, but it's actually made of fish meal, something like that, and they bake with it? Or am I remembering something else?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, that's what you'd expect from an island group. <You know>. No land, you know, just fish, you know. So, all right. No wheat. All right, we'll use fish powder. I wonder if they make bread with it. Fish powdered bread.
I wouldn't be surprised because in Argentina, to this day, they still make it because there's so much Middle Eastern influence in Argentina. In places where they make pizza. I mean, I've never tasted pizza here in the U.S. as I have in Argentina. I don't know how they make it, but it's just delicious when the pizza places the way they do it. And especially in Buenos Aires, there is a type of pizza they make, but they don't call it pizza. They call it fainá. And fainá is not made with flour. It's made with chickpea flour. Chickpeas ground to a flour.
Yeah. We call it, the Indians call it gram flour. It's what bhajis are made with. Delicious. It's chunky. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. It is very flavorful.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's it's got a good texture.
So much protein.
Yeah.
You don't need to eat meat if you eat that.
I have some. Maybe I'll go and get some. Cause I'm looking for things, you know, I'm not looking for like being a survivalist or anything like that. I just haven't got any money. So, And I think, you know, wouldn't it be cool to not have to go to the shops, or not have anybody to go to the shops for me, which is what I do at the moment. Or even not even have to buy things from the shops, you know, to just eat what I grow and grow what I eat. And that's great. And maybe even be able to trade some. That would be really cool. But I think at the moment I can just about support myself with eggs. If I give my eggs away. Anyway, look.
Well, if you have dandelions, that's incredibly nutritious.
Oh, I've got lots of those. I tasted one the other day and I thought that's as bitter as heck.
Well, believe it or not, it's not, produce stores sell chicory as a, you know, the same way they sell lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
But chicory, it's so bitter. I mean, it turns your face inside out. I mean, that's how bitter I find it.
Yeah.
But, dandelion, it's not, it's a little bit bitter, but it's not as bitter. And it's, if you put it in a juicer and you make it into a juice, it's so powerful and healing. I mean, one of our cats back in New York, she got sick. I don't know what she got sick with, but we didn't have the money to take her to the vet. And for 5 days, that's all she did. She drank dandelion juice that my mom would hand feed her. And at the end of 7 days, she recuperated and she was okay.
Aww.
Dandelion juice is incredibly powerful. And the funny thing is that here in Minnesota, it's full of it because European farmers, I think it was the Dutch, when they came to the state, the farmer's wife brought dandelion in case there would be a shortage of food. It's, you can subsist on it.
Mm.
And because of that, now the entire state is full of it.
Yeah.
And the thing is that people in their gardens, they spend time and effort to uproot them. We ourselves never touch them. We just leave them alone. And my neighbor who uproots them, every year she's full of dandelions. I don't bother them. They hardly come into my garden. So I guess it's like a... That's how you make your reality. If something
exactly.
bothers you, that you're putting your attention on it, you're multiplying it.
Here's the thing, is that sometimes you actually need that. Hang on. Am I crackling a bit?
Yeah. I hear you just fine.
Okay, sorry. It's just my headphones. Sometimes we need what our garden is producing in abundance. And I did the same thing. There's a thing called ground elder here. We have dandelion. I got dandelions aplenty here, and we also have ground elder.
Do you get wild fennel growing in Scotland?
I have a fennel.
That's really very powerful. Also,
that's lots nice with tea. But I'm waiting for my mint. I'm waiting for my mint to grow my mint tea. I've got these two tiny. They're about an inch high. Two tiny little sprouts of mint so far. It's coming back.
Are you putting shungite in your crops? Grow faster and bigger?
I suppose I could. Yeah, I could chuck some around.
Look at Messi. She had those seeds sprouting in like 2 days when normally they take 7 days to sprout.
Hmm. Well, maybe I'll put some shungite water on them later on. I'm currently drinking it. So, now, I said to you, come on my show on Monday and we'll talk about that. But I can't remember what that was that we were going to be talking
about. Oh, you mean the psychic protection stuff?
The psychic protection stuff, yes. Defense Against the Dark Arts by Walt Silber. A series of webinars featuring Solaris Blue Raven, Walt Silber, Eve Logan, amongst others. Defense Against the Dark Arts at the Megaversity of Light. We actually got the,
So you left out Professor Snape from that list?
Well, sadly he's passed on. I'd love to have Alan Rickman on my show, yes.
Isn't it interesting how I'm always attentive to voices is, his voice was just a tiny bit higher than Jack Davenport, the other actor. But you hear Jack Davenport speak and you would swear that it's Alan Rickman.
Hmm. Who is Jack Davenport?
I don't know how much how many series you watch there. And there's a British, there was a British series. I think it was called D or V. It was the title of the series was an initial, and Jack Davenport played the role of an intelligence investigator or a police investigator, because there were these cases of these people. They never ever, throughout all the episodes, they never used the word vampire. Mm-hmm. But there were these individuals that, if they got contaminated, they needed to feed on blood. They couldn't be exposed to sunlight. They couldn't speak on the phone. Their voices wouldn't carry across the phone, so they had to use digital devices to replicate a voice. So Jack Davenport was one of the, he was the main character because he was the investigative detective for these cases. But also, you may know him from that comedy series, Coupling.
All right. Yeah, I remember it once.
Three men and three women. Mm-hmm. You know?
He was one of the men. And no, he was one of the women, but now he's one of the men. Because people change things these days.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, A, defense against the dark arts and psychic attacks, and where... Yeah, because I'd like to discuss things with you, because, you know, in my experience of, like, doing these clearings and things like that and learning things is that, excuse me, there are levels, there are certain places where things attack generally or attach or attack, you know, maybe that's the same thing. And these things are more or less endemic to living on planet Earth. You know, we're all traumatized, it seems. I mean, I'm looking back into my own past, and it seems like, well, that's just kind of normal for lots of people. So if I'm feeling that way, then everybody on the underlying must have the same sort of feeling as me, this sense of, like, you know... WTF and sense of betrayal and all that stuff that mm-hmm. comes in, you know, if you're, you know, some kind of, well, if you have to be circumcised, for instance, or, you know, there's other satanic rituals that go on.
Yeah.
So we almost, you know, they almost push us through it before we're able to realize what it is. And we are already acting out what they're wanting us to act out.
Mm-hmm.
Until such a time as we're burned out, and that's when we realize, oh wow, that's what's been going on. I must deprogram myself. By then,
that's what it takes. Your liberation comes with your awareness.
Mm.
This is what I was saying on the show, that all these things with regarding black magic and black arts and psychic attacks, all of this stuff. It's really funny how. You know, some people think, oh, it's very complex, it's very powerful, it's very this, it's very that. In reality, it's not, because all of these different things rely on one single ingredient, one single element, for them to be of any use. And I'm sure you know what it is.
The element of surprise?
The element that it has to remain a secret. As long as it's a secret, as long as you are unaware, then it's effective. The instant it becomes known, then it just falls apart, because your awareness, your disagreement with it, your, you know, breaking contract with it, you're removing your consent from it. You awake to it and you see it and you watch it. Then it has no more power over you, because now you are aware of it. It's not unlike, you remember this thing that they say in quantum mechanics that, oh, when you're doing an experiment, you never get the same result twice, because the attention of the person performing the experiment actually changes the results of the experiment. Remember that?
Yes. Now, which one was that? That's the,
in quantum mechanics,
the observable principle.
Exactly.
It's not Heisenberg. That's the uncertainty principle. And it's not
the observer thing. Is that,
yeah,
when they were doing the interference patterns with light, remember that the big chicken of the egg argument, you know, is light a waveform? Is light a particle? Blah, blah, blah. Remember that? So when they were doing the experiment and nobody was watching, they would come back and the patterns would indicate that light was a waveform. And then when they were doing the experiment again, and when somebody was watching it, the results showed that light was a particle. Remember that? So
well,
that's how
the light behaved as it was expected.
Yeah. So that's how they were, they had no choice but to admit the truth that was facing them, that the consciousness, the awareness, that focused attention of the witness is actually changing the results of the experiment, even though all the steps are identical for all intent and purposes.
Oh, well, I've just had a really interesting thought. All right. So say the universe does respond to your thoughts.
Yeah.
What if it doesn't like some of them?
It doesn't care because you're here to create experience.
How do you know it doesn't care? How do you know? Because I was thinking, you know, if I was a particle and there was this kind of great big wave of expectation that I had to conform to, and I was just wanting to kind of hang around and be particle-like, you know, spin and stuff. And suddenly I hit this wave of expectation. Oh, God, I've got to conform now. Somebody wants me to conform. Oh, how boring. You know, there's some sort of anarchic reluctance in the universal matrix that that actually will, you know, doesn't like doing that sort of stuff. If it
well, that's going to...
You know
that
what I'm saying? Maybe I'm personifying the whole thing.
JP, remember this, that I know 100% of our attention and consciousness is on this particular node that we are incarnate in these bodies, right? But you yourself know and admit to the fact that we are multidimensional beings. Yes, we have this experience and physicality, but there are parts of us existing at other levels. So if you are meeting that resistance to something you want to manifest, that resistance is not so much coming from the universe, it's coming from your higher levels, because they will, this is what I've learned in interacting with guides and studying the subject. Yes, your higher self gives you a lot of leeway when you want to experience things with this human experience. But at all times, the guys are keeping an eye on what is it that you wanted to achieve when you came. And if the ego, you know, the physicality part of the consciousness wants to go in a specific direction, that's totally going to derail what you actually want to do, what you came to experience, they will do things to stop you. Because you're not supposed to be going in that direction. Yes, there is this whole free will thing, blah, blah, blah. But yes, you used your free will before you came, and you tell your group, you know, whatever I do, don't let me do this. Or whatever I do, make sure I always go in this direction. And if the high self needs you to lose an arm or a leg in order to make you stay in a particular place or study in a particular direction or do things in a specific way, it'll happen. I know it's horrible to think, oh, how can my higher self make me lose my arm? Well, think about it, an eternal being that will never die and can incarnate as much as it wants anywhere in the universe. Do you think it's gonna lose sleep over losing an arm in a body that whose lifetime is the blink of an eye? You know, you blink, you're born, you blink, you're gone. So the perspective, the point of view is very different. So it's not the universe that's going to resist something that you want to create or manifest. It's your own higher dimensions that are coming in and saying, no, JP. And the same thing happened with Dr. Costa when he was in his 20s, and he's a special case because ever since he was like 3 years old, he could openly see and speak to his guides. Whenever he would go to bed, they would come into his room, and because the house was always full of relatives, he thought they were his uncles coming in to talk to him before he went to bed, and it wasn't. It was only he could see them. They were his guides. So when he was in his 20s, because, you know, men in their 20s, they're always chasing girls, and they want a big, powerful car. He wanted this car that came out, and he asked, you know, the guys, is there a problem to me having this car? No. Can I get the car? Yeah. Well, so what's going on? Why is it that you're not letting me have the car? They said, because it's not what you should be doing. And you made us promise that we will keep you online. So if something is stopping you from manifesting a particular experience, it's not the universe, it's you yourself. That the super JP that I had a chance to meet. He's smarter than Earth JP, so he knows what's better for you.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I've been much more in contact with this fellow recently. And it's very interesting. You know, I have these very different conversations in my head these days. It's much more like talking to my guides all the time.
That's how it works. That's how simple it is. Yeah. People make it complicated unnecessarily.
It's just because there's lots of different voices. And I have lots of different sounds in my head because I deafened myself with the electric guitar over many years, I think. So if anybody actually listens to my music, it must come out really strangely. The equalization must be really weird because I tune it to my ears.
So you're here on a different range?
Around 10 to 12 kilohertz, and then above, there's not much there. So, I'd be lost on a high definition. I'd be lost on a high definition system. You know? I don't need it. I'm fine with AM radio.
The same hearing loss on both ears or just one?
Sometimes on both, but most times on one. It's quite interesting listening to a signal generator with the sound going in both ears, headphones, because you hear the sound sort of bouncing from left to right. Now, that takes me to a couple of points, which was, did you listen to the show before?
Today?
Yeah.
No, I was busy. I was running around doing errands.
Okay, no problem. But I was talking with Sean David Morton. I'm his producer on a Monday. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about time and space and genius. They were talking about these implants and potentials that make people think like dolphins with a holographic 360-degree imagination and sensor ability. One of the things I was thinking of, and we've been talking about this trauma release thing of slowly rocking from side to side, is that part of this thing is that dolphins, you know, and fish in general, mammals and fish and things, seaborne creatures, they're always slightly snaking from side to side when they swim. That's very sibilant. See, I wouldn't be able to hear that. That they're going from left to right, left to right, left to right all the time in a very smooth motion. And that's what gives them a harmonious mode of thinking and gets them in touch with the genius. What do you think of that?
Well, it reminds me of stuff that I saw at the Institute of Thought when Dr. Costa was still, before he retired, when he was still teaching the 15-step workshop, he actually taught a type of meditation where you sit on a chair and you start rocking back and forth like you're an upright pendulum. And you would accompany that. You could do that in silence, or you would choose a statement and you would break it up in syllables. So every swing was a syllable. And he used to call that the inner pulse meditation, because what that did, it brought you into sync with the earth rhythms, even though you weren't aware of it. And I've observed it in adults, and I have observed it in people when they're sitting and they're talking, or they're maybe watching TV or something. You see them rocking back and forth. I used to see it when I used to go to the SRF meditation centers. People that were meditating would be rocking back and forth. And if you ask them, why are you doing that? They weren't aware that they were doing it at all. So that's what Dr. Costa explained. It was a way to sync up to the earth natural cycle, natural vibration. The other thing that he taught was something in preparation if you are going to be engaged in some meditation or some mental effort. He taught to, you know, you cross your hands before you, you know, you're sitting down, and you cross your arms in such a way that the wrists, you have one wrist over the other wrist with the palms of the hands facing you. And what you do is you bring it up so that it's like, let me see. I know that the audience can't see, but you can, like this.
Hang on, I can't see it. Well, you got your camera. Let me just turn.
See how I crossed? I put one wrist.
All right, hang on. Yeah, you're doing like the birdie, the flapping
bird.
Yeah,
exactly. And what you do is you start doing like this with your fingers at high speed, you know.
Okay, so curling he's rippling fingers. His fingers, rippling fingers one by one. It looks like a flapping bird.
Yeah, so in the beginning, if you pay attention,
Zoidberg.
One hand begins, it goes faster than the other. But if you keep at it, a minute, 2-3 minutes, you get to the point where the hands are moving at exactly the same speed, exactly the same finger. So he explained that when that happens, is both hemispheres are now synced up. So that's the ideal preparation to either do a meditation or some mental effort or studying or whatever you want. That action synchronizes the hemispheres.
Wow, that's really good. So that would be, yeah. So I was just going to say that would be like the first step in protecting yourself is to do something like that, that balances your hemispheres. And then you should be calm by then, shouldn't you?
Yeah. The other thing with protecting yourself is be aware of your true self. Because if you're having a train of thought that is atypical for yourself, you know, not natural at all, is like something that would make you think, wait, why am I thinking this? I usually don't think in these terms. That's obvious interference. That's how I caught the fact that I had a part of my father's low soul in me. Because I literally caught myself thinking and feeling something that was completely unnatural to me. So when I had Frank Jordan scan me over Skype, and he asked with his pendulum, he says, yeah, you have 70% of your father's low soul stuck in you. Because I made that mistake when my father was literally, you know, dying. I was holding on to him in my arms. And, you know, the high soul leaves because it knows how to. But the low soul is terrified of death, so it just slips into the nearest person that's available, and that was me. So for 30 years, I wasn't really truly myself. I was carrying a stowaway. And it affects every part of your life because you're not feeling like your true self. You're not thinking like your true self. Everything is being affected because you have a stranger in you that shouldn't be there. So that's...
Would you call that an entity? A... attachment, a possession?
Well, anything that's self-aware and functions anything that functions and is aware and it uses energy and it is able to transport itself, that anything that falls under those definitions, that's an entity. Now, an entity doesn't necessarily, what happens is with the English languages, we have this. You have the denotation of words, which is the true significance of a word, and then you have the connotation, which is the whole emotional, mental, social conditioning that we put on words. Like, for example, if you look at the denotation of the word famous and notorious, they're synonyms, but we don't use them the same way, do we? You would like to be famous, but you wouldn't like to be notorious, correct? Because notorious means that you're famous for the wrong reasons.
You're bad.
So you are a notorious gangster, right? Not a famous gangster. You're just a notorious. So when they say entity, yeah, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's something evil. It's just, it's an entity. It's a node of consciousness that's aware, that uses energy, that it's capable of interfacing and interacting with other nodes of consciousness. Because that's the thing about us, is that we are entities. We have a body, but we're not the body. We have a mind, which is a nice or astral instrument, but we are not the mind. So what are we? We are a node of consciousness, and we are gigantic because we are not stuck. We are not limited by dimensions. So if you want to be true to the form, we are entities. We are living entities, and we are amazing entities because we have this power to co-create. But you know, society makes you believe that you're powerless and you should give them. You're powerless, but they want your power. Isn't that ironic?
Yeah. Well, exactly. You are powerless because they want your power, and they get it because they get what they want. That you don't get what you want. And that's the whole thing. And they even market the louche of disappointment from you not getting what you want and having a terrible day. You know, that's even got futures on that, you know.
Ah. So how do you dissolve that? Well, you become aware. Do you want to participate in this? No. I withdraw my consent to participate in this reality. That's another thing. When it comes to, you gave a perfect example. Here you had a traumatic experience that literally subtracted memories from you. And I suspect, I'm not saying it's what it is. I can douse it for you, the question, but I suspect you might be experiencing a little bit of soul fragmentation, because that's what they do. When they break off, they'll take a traumatic experience so that you don't have to deal with that energy that otherwise would drive you crazy. But there you have it, that point of attention that you had made it so that it created an indelible memory. So this is the tremendous power that we have. You know, you have the body, you're not the body. You have a mind, you're not the mind. Okay, so what am I for you? I'm an incredible, eternal, infinite, immortal node of consciousness who never separated from source. And you're just having this, enjoying this game that you're playing with yourself. Oh, that I am separate from source. Like somebody who says, I wonder what it would feel like to be a sailor, and you go off and you work on a ship. I wonder what it would be like to be a carpenter, and you go off and you buy wood and tools and you start building chairs and tables. It's all it is. It's, we're having this fun game. But what happened is, not unlike the dynamics you see in schools, you know, everybody's enjoying the games and the school playground, but there's always one or two or more bullies that just want to dominate the game for everybody and themselves. And that's exactly what you're saying. You know, instead of everybody being free to experience what they want to experience out of this dream, you have to have a small group of miscreants who just want to dominate the thing for themselves. Okay, we're going to call this place our place, and we're going to own it, and we're going to force everybody to play under our terms. And once you wake up to the fact that this is it, then you don't have to play anymore. And that point of attention, also what the point I wanted to make in addition to that is, your focus was so intense and so complete, and because it was non-traumatic, experiencing the placing of this decal, you saw how strongly it remained despite, you know, the traumatic event. Well, this whole business of the black magic and psychic attacks and protection, all of that, it also has to do with our point of attention. If you believe black magic is incredibly powerful, and some people claim, oh, it's far more powerful than white magic, and somebody asks, why? Because those who do black magic don't follow any rules. They don't have any ethics. They don't have any limitations, blah, blah, blah. So they come up with all these intellectual arguments why it's more powerful and you can't stop it. And, well, look at what you're doing. Your point of attention is so powerful, you are creating it. You are making it that, because you're giving it your attention, because you're building a belief system around it. So then it becomes that. So the first thing to do about, you know, this whole psychic attack, black magic stuff, is deflate it. Take your attention, you know, starve it of your attention. Starve it of your belief system. Don't buy into the belief system. these things rely heavily on belief systems. I mean, if you've ever been in a temple, synagogue, church, wherever, if you don't subscribe to the belief systems that's touted there, you better leave. Because that is everything.
So drain you dry, baby.
Yeah, that belief system is actually an energy structure, and it's very powerful. That's why they're terrified when somebody breaks off of the pack. Oh, look, that person isn't coming to services. Oh, look, that person is criticizing the rabbi or the priest or whatever it is. They're not believing what we're believing, and then it becomes fear. You know, we have to make sure that the neighbor believes in the things that we believe, and then we're safe because we're all on the same page and we know that they're not going to do anything stupid. That takes energy. It takes attention. It takes consciousness. So the power behind, this is the ultimate joke. The power behind psychic attacks affecting you is you. I don't care who the person is. I mean, they could be the most powerful magician, but if you say, I withdraw my consent, you know, I revoke whatever agreements, you know, brought me to this experience. I'm not interested. I changed my mind. I don't want the experience. Goodbye. Then who knows? You might feel a few minutes of the attack and then it just dissipates because it has nothing to bang on. It has nothing to, it's, I'll give you a 3D example of it. Which is, okay, if you have a rubber ball and you like to play bouncing the ball, if you don't have a rigid floor or a rigid wall to bounce it against, would you be able to play bouncy ball? You couldn't, because there's nothing to bounce against. Well, the human, you know, emotional, mental equivalent of that is when somebody is in a rage or they're very angry, and they're coming at you, and they're yelling at your face, and insulting you. What happens if you react? You add more fuel to the fire. Then the argument gets more boisterous, and it gets more volume, and it gets physically violent. Because now you're bouncing energy back and forth. You're reacting to the same energy. But if the person comes and you don't collaborate, you know, remember the Gandhi movement in India, non-violence, non-cooperation. You don't cooperate with that person's emotional tirade, then it just deflates. The person's energy just winds down because it has nothing to bounce off of. And that's exactly with these psychic attacks and everything. If there's nothing for it to bounce off of, it'll just go right through you. Because I'm not buying into the program. I'm not giving the person my belief system that you're super powerful and you can destroy me. They can't. It's a rule of metaphysics, and you cannot violate it. You have to be in agreement. The problem is, the reason it's so difficult to grasp and difficult to realize is because it goes back to what I said before. We are multidimensional. So even though you consciously are not agreeing with something, one of your other levels of consciousness could be agreeing. You could be consciously, okay, I revoke contract with this person that's bothering me. But then subconsciously you're terrified of this person and you believe that the person is powerful and your subconscious is agreeing. So then the experience doesn't go away. That's why I got into the habit of when I do my revocations, I call for conscious, subconscious, unconscious and prenatal agreements, because the agreements could happen at any of those levels, you know, agreements that you made before you came into physicality. So you have to address your levels of consciousness because it might be in one of those. I mean, if you douse with your pendulum, you could ask, have I agreed to this experience consciously? And you might get yes or no. And you keep asking on all the other levels. So when you hit a yes, okay, you know, I revoke all unconscious agreements I have made with, you know, blah, blah, blah. It all comes down to that. If you withdraw your consciousness, if you withdraw your belief that the person is, oh, this person is so powerful, they can destroy me in the blink of an eye. Well, yeah, they will, because you're just giving them permission. You just signed a contract that they could.
But here's the thing. Like I said, the hooks that people hook into are placed there very, very early on in our lifetimes.
Yeah, and so that's why it's your job to get rid of them.
Yeah, so we don't know that we've gotten rid of them. We don't know that we've got them until we're finally over the confusion stage of it, which is usually, you know, about about the age of 55 or thereabouts.
So,
I mean, in that we've already laid down another layer of karmic pattern in response to the programming.
Well, no, a lot of...
You see what I mean?
It's like I've had arguments about this with my mom because she was always...
You argue with your mother? You know that mother's always right. You know that, don't you?
If I agree to it, yeah. Well, you know, there's the belief or the perception that, oh, it took me 50 years to mess this up. It'll take me another 50 years to fix it. No, absolutely wrong. Because if you walk into a cave that hasn't seen sunlight in 1,000 years, for 1,000 years, this Egyptian tomb was sealed. And then they broke the seal, they removed the stone, and then they brought in torches and lamps. Well, guess what? The 1,000-year-old darkness just disappeared in a flash. It's gone. That's the thing that's stuck in your belief system. You know that, oh, it took me 10 years to build this ignorance, this program, this whatever it is, or it'll take me another 10. No, that's a false belief that you're shooting yourself in the foot. Yes, it took you 100 years to build up all this ignorance and all these bad programming and bad conditioning. It doesn't take another 100 years to get rid of it. Your belief that takes you the same amount of time to destroy it is what keeps you stuck. Look at, let's be, practical here. 3D material practical. Takes 5 years to build an office building. I'm just throwing a number out there. How long does it take controlled demolitions to bring it down? 5 years?
15 seconds of free fall. Depends if the building's been mined previously.
Okay.
But anyway.
So they can do it with a building, but you can't do it with a belief system, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So, but here's the thing, Bob. And this is where we get, again, down to this atomic level. And it was an interesting concept that, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, it's like, I saw it on a friend's Facebook page, and she says, unclench your chakras. And I thought, what an interesting thought. My God, yes, I have clenched all my chakras up. You know, and I suppose that's what you mean by closing chakras down, is that, you know, they are squeezed tight like a sphincter.
Well, I'm not aware of that. I know that the chakras are made up of 6 vortices arranged like a cube, which makes perfect sense because the cube resonates to the 6th dimension. And I do what I know about how they work comes to me from you know Richmond. I mean,
Ralston.
Ralston. Ralston.
Yeah, from Hawaii.
Yeah, remember the book that he wrote, Subtle Energy and the World We Live In?
Ah, I'd like to read that. I haven't, no.
Yeah, in that book, he describes the anatomy of the chakra, and based on that description is why I made that cube that I offer in my website, the little powerhouse, because it has 6 implosion coils and the flow is arranged just like a chakra. So the way I use it is I just let each individual, one by one, each individual chakra just float into the cube and you keep it there in your mind's eye until it's cleared off, because that's what the cube will do. It'll clear off all that gunk that's there and then just float back. It's a misconception that chakras are permanently fixed at their location. No, they move constantly. In fact, that's what Regina Martino, the French scientist who wrote the book on Shungite, that's what her experiments showed, is that when people are exposed to the high frequency EMF fields like cell phones and Wi-Fi, instead of the chakra being in its natural position along the spine, along, you know, the Sushumna, it tends to move one way or the other. But when you take away the EMF field, the chakra begins to gravitate back to its natural position. The problem is, okay, where can you go that there won't be any EMF around you? Where cities now, cities, schools, your house, everywhere you go, there's, you know, Wi-Fi or some kind of wireless thing. So when she started playing with the shungite, that's when she found that even though the person was being exposed to the field, the person being in contact with the shungite, the chakras would start moving back to their natural position. What she further, she did more experiments combining shungite with other stones, because what she was finding is that the shungite tends to affect primarily the lower chakras, where the upper ones were being left, you know, very little effect. So when she started combining shungite with this, shungite with this, she found the perfect match with amethyst. So when she had the subject hold a piece of shungite in one hand and amethyst in the other, then all of the chakras from the bottom to the top started lining up to their natural positions. That's why I came up with that new mix that we were talking about in Nancy's show. It has the two types of powder, you know, regular shungite powder, silver saturated powder, and amethyst powder. So when I had the ladies play with it, I said, you should be feeling it in all your chakras. And Stephanie said, yes, definitely. I feel it. And they felt that it was more female energy than male energy, because you actually have the mix is actually addressing all the chakras in the body, as opposed to just the, you know, the base ones.
Perfectly timed. Well, thanks very much. Don't go away. We're going to get into some more.
Very I just did it at the party.
Perfect. All in time, all in time. Evening, all. Oh, it's us. Silver.
Good vocals there, JP.
If you sing along with it, it makes it less unbearable. Anyway.
So you want to discuss protection techniques.
Protection techniques and potentially callers as well. But let's hit the protection techniques hard. Now, the first thing you said essentially was the only reason, you know, that you get attacked or injured is because you're actually drawing them to yourself through ancient commitments that you made in potentially past lives, which we call contracts. Is that correct?
Well, you mean as a given rule?
One of the reasons that you might have, you know, certain attacks or certain things happening to you is because that in a previous life or a parallel dimensional existence, as you say, you're agreeing to it at the same time.
Well, the reason why you're being attacked really doesn't matter. It's why the attack is affecting you. That's what matters. It's affecting you because, well, it's part of your belief system that there are powerful magical people out there. And if they focus on me, I'll give you a perfect example. My mother's sister in Argentina, for example, she's addicted to going to these witches and warlocks and faith healers and blah, blah. And every time there's some kind of fight in the family with her children or daughters-in-law, instead of sitting down and listening, you know, sitting down around the table and discussing things like intelligent, educated people, no, the first thing they do is go look for some witch or some warlock to do some kind of juju on the person to punish them, you know. I don't know, make them break a leg or make them change their mind or make them...
How very evolved of their spiritual
Oh,
quality.
Incredible. We're talking 12th century BCs here. So, people are literally terrified of my mother's sister because of that, because they know that she has this tendency that if she gets in a fight with you or she hates you for some reason, she will seek out these psychics to destroy you. Well, it's absurd because my aunt is powerless. Absolutely. You know, there's nothing she can do. Her power is to scare people. People are scared. You know, they believe that, oh, she's going to go and get some professional to blast me out of existence. That's her power. That people agree to that. You know, they buy into that fear. So that's why she gets her way and she controls people through fear, because people, oh, like for example, I'll give you a perfect example here. We've been gone from Argentina for 30 years now. And, here in Minnesota is living one of the sons of one of my mother's first cousins. And, this cousin with her sister traveled from Argentina here to visit this man. Well, this cousin's aunt, which, you know, the sister of his mother, she was worried about coming to Minnesota and meeting with my mother, because since she knows my mother is not on speaking terms with her sister, her thinking was along the lines, oh my God, if she finds out that I saw her sister, she's going to light a candle in my name and she's going to hurt me. You know, this, it's like an episode from a sitcom. So she was terrified that if my Aunt Julia found out that she visited us, my Aunt Julia would take revenge on her magically. How's that?
Well, that's what you have when you have people who are bought into a satanic society.
Well, remember, Argentina, it's a Nazi country.
Yeah,
so
exactly. It's a satanic society. I'm not being that flippant. I know what I'm talking about. You know, it's a model for the rest of the world if you want to look at it, unless we want to change things.
Yeah.
We have a caller. Noreen of the Helping Hand.
Hi, you guys. Hi, JP, and hi, Walt.
Hi, Noreen.
Hi, Noreen.
First, I got to tell you, JP, you guys were talking, I think Walt brought up Sean Guide, or one of you guys did, and I have to say, your co-host, did you just have Nancy, I think? She used to make the Sean Guide pendants. Am I correct, JP?
She still makes them.
Oh, she still does. Okay. Walt was answering. That's good. Okay, that's great, because I got a gift actually from a listener of the station who was listening, and she ordered one of the pendants. So for my birthday, I got that pendant that Nancy made. I like it. It's really cool. It's really nice. It's Shungite. I like it. And it's my first piece of Shungite.
How big is it?
Does it feel like
a good stone? If you chucked it at somebody, it would hurt.
No, it
wouldn't even break a window if you threw it at a window. Sort of size.
You know, that's a hard question. yeah, maybe it would break a window. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Okay. It's not huge, but.
You know what's really amazing about Shungite? I don't know if you're electrically inclined, but if you know somebody who's got a meter, or you may even have a meter that you tell, you know, gender stereotypes and all that. If you've got an electric meter, it feels like, rock or plastic, but it actually conducts electricity. It's like metal. It's very strange.
It is different. Is it different in that respect from other types of gems?
Yeah. Very, very different. Very, very anomalous, isn't it, Walt? Walt?
Anomaly.
Isn't Shunga is anomalous in its behavior?
How would you?
Well, because it appears to be a mineral that is, you know, generally, it appears to be a non-metal. But it behaves electrically like a metal. It conducts electricity.
It conducts electricity, and it has organ polarity. And when it's part of a circuit, there's actually more current in the circuit with the shungite than without.
So, now, here's the thing. Now, before we get into your question, I just want to put this question in because this was something that came up in Sean's show as well. And it's something you were talking about earlier. And it's about destiny. Like, if you were going to a particular place, if, you know, this is where your destiny was taking you, and you were accelerated by some outside agency, that somehow doesn't break the rules. Whereas if you push someone completely off their path, that does break their rules. That breaks their free will. But
yeah, but what if the person had a prenatal agreement that you would take them off their path because that's exactly what they wanted to experience?
Yeah, exactly. It gets really complicated, doesn't it? Because, like, look, how much of it is my permission and how much of it is somebody jerking me around?
If there's one thing I've learned from shamanic journeys, is how embarrassingly ignorant I am. My God, all of this exists, and this, and this, and this, and I know I've never seen it before, and it's news to me, and I like, it's like I've never picked up a book. So, you can literally spend a lifetime, you know, overthinking these things, but I just rather live in the moment and see what comes next.
You better recall all this stuff and then get somebody to type it up and make books. Anywho, now, Noreen knows that you're a human design man. Mm. And, for this reason, she has called into the show. So she has probably 1,000 questions she wishes to lay at your feet to see which one you select with your toe.
Oh, I don't know about 1,000. Just,
sorry, 500.
Oh, no, not even. No, hi, Walt. I actually just did a friend request. Hi, I did a friend request for Facebook from you just now, actually. In relation to human design, you know, Ra used to talk about, what is it, 2027? That's the year that of this great, like, rave transition with the solar plexus and all that. He mentioned in due course of that about the 55th gate, you know, and all that. And I'm kind of thinking, well, okay, so if 50% of the population, I know people listening are going, what are we talking about? But anyway, whatever, we'll explain it to them. But if half the population is, you know, solar plexus, emotional authority, whatever you want to call it, and half are not, then how would that, like, frequency switch occurs or whatever, like, okay, so for example, I'm emotional authority person, but then maybe someone else may not be. So then how do individuals play into that switchover, or do you give much credence into that theory he gave or whatever?
So, I'm trying to understand. So what is it exactly that you're asking? Is that how will people that don't have a defined solar plexus are going to feel? I don't know. I'm not familiar with this 55th gate that you're saying. Are you saying that he predicted that by a specific date there would be some kind of switchover of something? I haven't listened to all his lectures, so that's why I'm asking you.
Yeah, I think it was 2027. Something to do with that solar plexus becomes kind of like a key point of evolution.
Well, I know that the reason for that is because of all the 9 centers in the human design body graph, the solar plexus is the only center that is both a motor and a center of awareness. If you look at the heart center, it's a motor. If you look at the splenic center, it's the center of awareness. The solar plexus is both. And he, in one of the lectures that I heard, is that this thing hasn't reached its final expression yet. It is still evolving because the solar plexus is the one that's putting out this wave of emotional energy that the person that has the solar plexus as their authority, they have no truth in the moment. They have to wait. They have to ride out the wave. They have to give themselves time. before they decide on something that entails somebody else. Like, for example, you don't have to wait if you have to decide what shoes you're going to wear or if you're going to brush your teeth or not. That's silly. That only entails you. But if you have to decide on something that affects you and the other being whoever is in your life, then yes, you have to give yourself time because that's the only way you'll get the clarity to understand what is the right decision for you. My mom is a manifesting generator with a defined splenic center, meaning her intuition is on all the time, but a defined solar plexus as well. So whenever she was tempted to use her intuition and make a split second decision, it always blew up in her face. When she learned to give herself time, okay, I need to decide what am I going to do with this person. And she gave herself time to answer the person. Then she knew what was the right decision and it hasn't failed her since. Now it is very, the evolution of the solar plexus is very significant because, humanity was subverted back in the time of Atlantis and they were the true high, the low soul of the body has the solar plexus as its highest chakra. Like the high soul has the crown chakra as the highest chakra. But in ancient times, the soul would reside in the little tiny chamber at the center of the heart. I mean, if you look at the anatomy of a human heart, there's a spherical chamber in the very center and medicine, you know, modern medicine, they kind of guess or speculate at what the purpose of that chamber is because it doesn't seem to be doing anything for or against the muscle. But that's because that's the nodal point where the high soul used to sit. That's why the ancient Aztecs and all those civilizations that believed in human sacrifice, that's what they would tear out, the heart, because that's where the high soul would sit. But that got subverted. You know, people were forced into the left brain and little by little, the incarnating soul, instead of sitting in the heart, was sitting up in the center of the brain. So, the solar plexus forces us to be aware of this constant wave of emotional energy because that's what we have to get back to. We have to get back to our feelings. Your thinking is going to be affected. There was a really bad decision made back in the time of Atlantis when they decided that the mind would be accessible. The soul is not accessible. You cannot, I know all this business of psychic attacks and magic and blah, 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 but you cannot interfere with a person's soul without there being some kind of agreement. But that's not, we can't say the same thing about the mind. The mind is like an open door. It's like you went to work and you left the front door of your house wide open with the lights on. People walking down the street can see that, oh wow, look at this house. That's the problem with the mind, is that it's accessible unless the person knows how to deal with it. So we have to get back to our feelings because your feelings will never betray you as long as they're not processed, because pay attention to the way people speak. Oh, I think I love you. What? What does love have to do with thinking? You can't think your feelings. What happens is that certain emotional states stem from you entertaining certain streams of thought. They induce that emotion in you. It is not true emotion. It is not true feeling. Because this is one of the things that we discussed in previous shows. You're aware of this concept of the veil of forgetting that happens when you incarnate, that all of a sudden, you know, you forget your previous lives. You can't see the other side. You can't speak to entities that are discorporate. You know, you can't see devas or nature unless you have psychic abilities because you're affected by this veil of forgetting. Okay, the veil of forgetting affects the waking mind, yes. But it does not affect the body. It doesn't affect the physical body, this animal body that we inhabit. It doesn't affect the cells. So that's why the body knows what's right for you and the mind doesn't. If you've read Human Design, you know that they call it the not self mind because that's not self. So your body knows, the mind doesn't. So that's where this evolution of the solar plexus is so critical, because it's bringing back us back to our feelings. And those of us that I have an undefined, I have an open solar plexus, Mm-hmm. It just means that I get to feel 200% of the emotions of the people around me. Before I understood how that worked, I used to be overwhelmed by it. I never wanted human company. I just wanted to run away because wherever you go, you're feeling what everybody else is feeling. But once I understood, oh, it's not my energy. I'm just sensing other people's energy. Then I can just take my mind off of it. I don't need to give it any attention because it's not mine. You know, why should I worry about it? Why should I be affected by it? You're the one that has to write it, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, well, that's true of all our, when you call it undefined centers, right? We feel the conditioning coming to us from that. So that, yeah. And that is interesting that the solar plexus is both a motor and an awareness center simultaneously. Mm-hmm. It, like you said, it's the only one. So that's significant. Oh, go ahead.
But I'm looking at your body. Oh, you're a projector like me.
Oh.
And you have my same profile, the trial and error process.
Yeah, 3-5. Oh, okay.
Good luck with that.
Except that I'm emotional defining, you're not, is kind of a, yeah, that's the, there is this, I think, you know, if you don't mind me saying, well, and I'm sure you understand this, studying human design, it seems to me like people with defined solar plexus like myself and many others, and then many others like yourself, the aura does seem different in my observation. I'll be honest.
Don't forget that the projector aura is not like the generator aura.
Right,
the projector
aura
is focused.
Yeah. But for example, okay, manifestors, they're supposed to have like this steely aura, you know, supposedly, right?
It's closed off. It's difficult to connect with them unless they let you.
Yeah. But what I noticed about the manifestors that are emotionally defined, they really have a different aura around them than the people that don't. Manifestors, especially because you could see the difference in them because, you know, their auras are so different in a way from, you know, others that it's very apparent. And, but when they're emotionally defined, it's really different. People that are manifestors that are emotionally defined in, from my observation, they do seem more inviting. That's just what it's, you know, when I'm around them, I speak to them, I feel like that solar plexus is kind of that warm, circling energy, and they seem more inviting than the manifestors that are not emotionally defined or seem very different.
Think about it. When a center is defined, it's constantly, it's like a movie projector. It's constantly putting out a beam of its own essence. But when a center is open, undefined, it's like a receiving station, like a radar receiving station. It's constantly receiving the energy from the defined centers. So it's most logical that yes, if you're in the presence of a defined, an emotionally defined manifestor, that aura is going to be colored by that emotional wave that you're going to feel. And if you pay attention, if you stick around them long enough, it's never the same intensity because the wave goes, has a peak and a valley. Mm-hmm. So as you go from peak to valley, you will notice that difference in them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure JP is listening to us going, I don't know. I know JP studies a little bit of this. I know because it's for, if we're alienating you guys because of this conversation, but.
So what the heck are you talking about, guys?
See, I knew it. I'm like, poor JP and if it, lady listeners, but you know what surprised me one time is, one of the listeners in chat, she didn't know anything about human design, but then when we were talking about it, on JP's show one time, and she's like, wow, I was really impressed by that topic. So I guess even just listening to something you don't partially understand, you can still learn. But I see Mona. Hi, Mona. Oh, go ahead.
I've spoken to JP about his design.
Right, yeah. Oh, no, but I mean, somebody in the chat one time, we were, you know, because she was, I thought maybe she wouldn't, you know, people wouldn't understand, but they were really, like, impressed by the topic because, you know, it was new to them and, yeah, so it's always
good. It's the user manual for the human body. And when you go to school, nobody teaches you about you, which is the worst crime on earth, but that's,
right.
That's the way I put it. And it's you can't make it any more simpler. It's the user manual for the body. You're the passenger in the body and the body knows exactly where to go and what to do. Don't mess with it and it'll perform beautifully.
Right.
the mind doesn't understand and it tries to throw a wrench in the works.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because
we've been programmed to put it there by the word no.
Right on, Mona. You said it.
But I had a
She's
question.
Here.
Oh, whoa, where? Let me check. Cause, okay, the dantian to me is below the belly button. Am I right?
The what?
Dantian.
What's a dantian?
It's like an energy source, but it's not the solar plex.
Oh, she's talking about the sacral, the below the navel, I think technically. And
are you talking about the main thing, the channel that goes from the belly button to the spine?
Okay, anyway.
No. Sorry. We're trying to get
the solar plex. Well, I'm trying to check where the meridian and all that is, because if my solar plex is...
I try that for a long time. I try to figure that out. And it varies from person to person. For me to locate a person's solar plexus, I have to use a pendulum.
Okay.
Because I have found in my dowsing that if you douse a person and they have it exactly where the belly button is, I douse the next person, it's like 2 inches above the belly button. I douse the next person and it's 1 inch
below
the belly button.
But should it be in a general space, and should we try to put it back there? Because somebody... JP, your videos today, I listened to both of them with Simon Parks and the woman. Oh, I tried to
Eve
get
Logan.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. They were great. Anyway, I feel like somebody's tied a rope around, and it's not my waist because I'm very long waisted. And like, it's just in this area, and it's not me. I'm not holding anything against anybody. There's no worry or fear or anything else like that. And I'm just wondering if I can label it, because I know the dantian is below, and the solar plexus, I guess now that you said it can move anywhere, oh my gosh. And it's not like a stomach ache, but it's in that area of the diaphragm, and it's just like aggravating. And I would like to know how and why that might be occurring. Did that make sense?
Sounds like you need some chakra cleansing.
Oh, well, yeah, I'll go for anything. Once, twice, maybe six times. Because I get the head tingles and all that, and the whole rest of it seems to be fine. But even the other day, it was like somebody shut my lights off, and I basically got hurt. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. But this has happened my whole life, like something.
Mona.
Yes, dear.
Here's my my diagnosis. You're tired, okay. And you need to rest.
Oh, I take my naps. I'm not really, well.
No, you're tired. You're really tired.
Tired from what?
You know, deep tired, and you need to take a break. And then you'll feel much better, and you'll be much stronger. You know, there's no way around it. There's no substitute for it. Get some rest. That's my advice.
Okay.
And you know
well,
it's true, don't you?
No.
No, I'm refusing. You're tired. I can hear it.
No, I'm feeling like this bump is in right in that area, like something is literally like a rubber band around me. Is that tired? I mean, I don't know.
Well, look, what happens if you breathe into that rubber band tightness there?
It won't relax for me to get down to the deep breathing, because I've been a breather my whole existence.
Is it like a yawn that can't quite get there?
No.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you want to have a really deep
yawn.
Oh, I do.
I do great yawns with tears coming out of my eyes. Mm-hmm. Good yawns.
So it's like a pressure in there.
Oh, yeah. It's like a big ball right now, like a size of a fist.
If it was a color, what would it be?
Black.
If it was a shape, what would it be?
Like a fist.
Uh-huh.
A clenched fist.
Clenched. So,
Mona, can I get your permission to douse questions for you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no
issue
with that.
On you go.
Especially you, Walty, baby. Yeah.
See, I guess a bit of that special Walt attention.
I love Walt. So
meanwhile, while I'm talking, because otherwise we're not doing too well on the radio, Sir Walt will be dousing your very plex. And when he comes back with the results, we'll know what's been going on. So, yeah. All right, if it had a texture, what texture would it be?
solid.
Uh-huh. Would it be warm, cold, hot?
Just evident to be there.
Hmm?
Just it being evident of being there.
Yeah, but there is it like cold or is it hot?
Right now it's angry.
Angry. Uh-huh.
Yeah. I put the answer there in the Skype chat. I asked for the other chakras and no, it's that specific one. And when she said angry, that made it all.
But I'm not. That's the whole funny thing.
Yep.
You can't give me too many angries.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, Mona.
And it feels good to be massaged for me laughing too. See, that's the whole funny part too.
Yeah. Yeah, it needs to see things from both sides. It needs to, you know, we're talking about, have you ever seen Stevie Wonder?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you ever watched him, play his piano and mm-hmm. sing? Do you know what he does? Can you see what he's doing? Can you picture?
Swinging back and forth.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's going sideways back and forth. I go front
sideways.
And back.
Yeah.
But do you know what he's doing?
So I gotta do a sideways thing now, man?
Do you know what he's doing, Mona? He's swimming through the music.
Interesting.
Look at him the next time you see it and you see exactly what he's doing. Now, you can do this yourself. You can swim. Imagine that you're, you know, even in your chair, that you're in, some sort of flow that is going, you know, coming down from above, so you're swimming through it. And then imagine swimming like a fish through it, nice and smoothly. And one of the things that I found that doing that, it really helps to unlock all my locked up spinal mm-hmm. column things. Cause you know, swimming like a fish is beautiful. It's really a wonderful feeling. It's really relaxing to do that, to have that those curves move up and down your spine. It's really important for you. So
that may,
here's the thing, right? If you've got something that you are sensing that is angry, right? But I'm not angry, then there's something I have to say that you're angry about that you haven't, you've disconnected that part of you, and it's probably like we have all the time. It's a piece of child. A piece of
okay,
little
now,
moment.
In the beginning of your show, Walton, mm-hmm. Walt said something, I think, about like a pendulum thing that we don't recognize, but we're swaying. I'm a constant rocker. So I think going in the opposite direction is actually the best part of being able to recognize that. Because I am. I'm always in sync with energies.
Do you rock back and forwards or do you rock side to side?
Front and back. Not side to side.
All right. Well, why not try rocking side to side?
I've worn out rocking chairs.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So what we need is a new kind of rocking chair that rocks you from side to side. That would be nice. I tell you, that would be really nice.
But I can put on some good music that can do it too. See,
yeah.
That's where
well, dancing
I like to
does,
implement
yeah.
things.
Dancing works like that because you're doing that with your, when you dance, you move like a fish as well.
So what I think is then, because I've been regimented in trying to do things, instead I got to undo things. I get it. Okay.
And Walt is asking for permission to access your solar plexus for a clearing.
Do I have to unfold my arms and sit still? I can handle that.
Yeah. Try and unfold your arms.
When you breathe out, can you breathe out through your belly? Just close your eyes and see the breath coming out through your belly.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of coming in and out of your nose, just in and out of that area.
Right. It has relaxed some because normally I can go down to my pelvic area. So it's just strange. I guess I really didn't realize how much I was putting myself through the ringer because I don't feel like it.
Don't you? How many times, see, it's funny to find your you know, we all have a little tyrant inside us, and it's, you know, it's a hurt in a child that hasn't quite gotten over itself. Well, it's worse than that. It becomes a scar. It's like a psychic scar in the emotional body, and it happens after trauma.
Oh, and that's all possible.
These exercises that bring you from side to side, they are the key to unlocking that trauma.
Mm-hmm.
It's a side to side motion because, you know, you hear about people who are bipolar,
mm-hmm.
right? It's because they, instead of flowing from side to side, they snap from side to side. They go very extremely, very fast from one, you know, emotional state to another in the twinkling of an eye. And that's not normal. That's the result of trauma. You know? It's violent, and it has a violent effect on people around you as well. So
that's rather interesting.
That's the result of this kind of emotional scarring. And that has also the effect of being, making yourself receptive to these sort of attacking forces, if you want to put it that way. But it's basically, you know, you're laying out some sugar and cakes for people because.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And they're really good too.
Yeah, well, that's what you're saying. You know, come and eat me.
Oh, no. I mean, I've been working real hard making banana bread brownies and carrot cake and mints, because that's...
Whose party are you? Is someone coming to a party? Are you preparing
for
a birthday?
They're edibles, and people like feeling better because it's healing, so I just make them extra nummy and extra organic, gluten-free kind of thing, you know. They're really good, too.
How awesome. I wish you could send me a packet, but I know that
I know. I was going to say I want some too.
The chocolate Himalayan pink salt is excellent. I had one more other statement to make because I love listening to Sean David Morton, and I probably said his name wrong, but when I met him, I wish I would have known this because I would have had him help me do this because I'm sure that there is psychic imprinting on injuries that us consciously don't have a clue about in this third dimensional illusion, right? And that it had something to do with touching the perineum area, the genital areas, and the roof of your mouth.
Hmm? Hit the taint. Taint here, not taint there.
Well, you know what I mean. I wish I would have known about that then. What?
That's an energy tube right there. That's the channel of the Sushumna is there. That's why there are some healing modalities that use that point. When I took the Flower of Life workshop, where they teach you how to assemble the Merkaba with all those breaths, that's mm-hmm. where you visualize the current of prana that comes up from the earth, goes into that area. In fact, if you press there, you feel like it's the end of a tube, your fingers just keep going in, like there's nothing resisting. That's one end of the tube. The other end of the tube is at the top of your head.
Yeah, in Tai Chi, they call it I forget what the pole is called, but it's a pole.
Okay, take back your solar plexus, Mona.
Oh, pardon me, I have to belch first.
See, that's good. You got the
that's
energy.
That's good. That's a belief.
You got it moving, babes.
Well done, Bolt.
Well, because I'm very gentle in that area because I've grown up with a lot of ingestion just in figuring out what real diet for living is. And so I'm real sensitive to that area. But it really, I think it's a lot deeper than what I've recognized that I haven't witnessed to allow to get through, I guess. Right.
Yeah, the chakras, I was going to say they're very, like Walt was saying, we can always, I guess, strengthen them by doing, you know, certain types of things to alter them or affect them. I've just been starting to get into yoga. In your opinion, what do you guys think, like, I don't know, do you think yoga really does kind of like balance, I mean, not just your physical body, but your chakras and your energy field?
Personally, I would look into Tai Chi if I was going to do something like that, because it's a gentle defense system for all kinds of arenas in your body. It's an amazing art. And when people can just have the energy so centered in their dantian or solar plexus, probably both of them, and just be able to put the energies through their hands and push people across the room without touching them, that's where I'd want to go. It's a great discipline. Go
ahead. Right. Okay, yeah. Well, yoga, what I do like about it so far is, you know, it seems to make the body more flexible, and I like that aspect of it. So
what makes the body inflexible, people?
Probably lack of movement in the areas. Yes. You don't.
Oh, thank you.
Too much thinking.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Not enough playing and reclining motion. Yeah, got it.
Yeah, anyway, Walt, you seem like you have a lot of experience in different areas of healing too. And I know, Mona, you talk a lot about Shungite, and I was just telling them earlier, you know, when I first got on that call, that I got for a gift from a listener to a station. She lives near me, so we finally met, and she gave me one of the Shungites that JP's former co-host Nancy made, and, you know, I wore it, and I love it. It's my first piece of Shungite. So, you know, and to be honest with you, Mona, I have to thank you because you were one of the first people, not the first, but, you know, you really talked a lot about Shungite on your shows, you know. So it really
got... I've had Nancy and Walt both on quite a bit, actually, but, yeah, it's been fun. And I almost asked him today, and I almost hit up JP going, gosh, you want to talk? I said, no, we're just going to let it slide.
I was very busy. I have to say, Nancy's not my former co-host. She's my occasional co-host.
She has her own show, too. So with
Walt. Cool. Hey, but anyway, I got one of her pendants as a gift, and I love it. It's beautiful. It's really, I like the little wrapping around it, and it's great. I love it. Yeah. And I want to give a shout out to Dar. I don't know if she's listening, but Dar, she gave it to me for my birthday, and, she lives here in Southern California near me. So we finally met, and that was a blast. And yeah, and she goes, here, you know, Nancy made this. I'm like, wow, it's very nice. It's my first piece of Shungite. I have other crystals. I have, you know, amethyst, and I don't have like tons of it. I just have this little basket full of crystals, but it's my first piece of Shungite, you guys. So congratulate me. I'm now part of the Shungite club. No, just kidding. I love it.
Welcome to the quantum entangled universe. That is the Shungite continuum.
Well, yeah. Wow.
Wait a minute. Awesome. Let me get my pyramid. Say that again.
What would be, and just question about that. What would be, you guys, I hear a lot about Oregonite as well as Shungite. Those are two gems and crystals I've been hearing, you know, a lot about. What would you say are different properties of each that you see that, you know, one has that the other doesn't and so forth?
Oregonite is not a gem, though.
Right.
Oregonite is, it's a term coined by Dr. Carl Venz, who came up with the idea because Wilhelm Reich, in his work, he was able to catalog different types of argon. Normal argon has a pulsing nature to it. When in the presence of an EMF field, it becomes overexcited, and then it depletes, and it's like a stagnant. That's why years ago, when computers still had CRTs, which produce a lot of dead argon, people working in front of their computers for so many hours, they would feel like their eyes burning, they had trouble focusing, their joints would hurt, or their mouth would go dry. It's not that they were ill in any way, it's just that they were sitting in a field of dead argon. And also, he cataloged what happens to the argon in the presence of radiation. So when you make an argon concentrator, which is a box or a room made up of layers of organic, metallic, because organic substances attract and store argon, metallic substances conduct and repel argon. So when you combine the two, you can actually create a direction of argon flow. But an Oregon concentrator, be it a box or a room that you can sit in, will concentrate all kinds of Oregons, good ones and bad ones. So that's not healthy, especially if you're in a city environment where there's so much stagnant Oregon because there's so much EMF radiation. So Carl Wentz worked on the thought, okay, how can I get the Oregon to pulse back to its healthy state? So by combining resin and metal shavings, you know, the resin is attracting the Oregon. The metal is repelling it. The organite then has this pulsing effect, and that pulsing effect is what brings the Oregon back to a healthy state, pulsing state. And that's why people would go around doing this Oregonite gifting, where they would throw the little cups near cell phone towers and radio towers. But when I started playing with it and experimenting with it, the problem is that pulsing capability of it is limited in time. Over time, the more dead Oregon that goes through it, it begins to deplete and it doesn't do anything anymore. So you have to take the Oregonite pieces and put them out in the sunlight so that the sunlight will clear out the stagnant Oregon in it, because it's like a sponge. It literally absorbs stuff. And I thought, this is really not convenient as a long-term solution, because this thing gets depleted, so after a while it'll stop doing its work. And that's when I stumbled on the Sperling technology, where Sperling found how to make his devices active so that they're constantly moving the Oregon and constantly changing the spin from negative to positive. So when I combine Sperling technology with the resin piece, it really took off, because I don't need to put my devices out in the sun. They're constantly working. But the limitations of the Sperling technology is that it doesn't affect EMF fields. It leaves them untouched. It only works on Oregon purely. So when I discovered Shanghai, JP was the first one to mention the name in one of Frank's shows, Frank Jordan. And I bought a box from an eBay vendor, and I got the stones, but had no idea what to do with it. So when I got the recording of his show with Nancy, where Nancy spoke in depth of what it does and how it works, Shanghai, you know, brings you into another whole dimension, because not only is Shanghai affecting the Oregon field, but it's literally affecting what causes the Oregon to go stagnant, what causes the Oregon to get sick. It's affecting the EMF field, and it doesn't absorb anything, it doesn't filter anything, it changes the spin. So by changing the spin, that energy that's degrading to life, cell phones, Wi-Fi, cordless phones, now it's actually biocompatible. It's actually beneficial to life. It doesn't hurt you. You can have your cell phone in your pocket. It's not going to do anything to hurt your body, because it's that counterclockwise spin that's actually the thing that's negating you. That's why when Regina Martino did her studies with Shanghai, your healthy human living body, the energy is clockwise. I mean, if you douse, you can douse with a pendulum. And if you douse a living plant, you'll get clockwise spin. If you douse a fresh piece of fruit, it'll be positive. If you douse something that's decaying, a rotten fruit, rotten vegetable, rotten piece of meat, you will get counterclockwise. Counterclockwise is death spin, to say it in another term. So by the Shanghai grabbing the energy fields in water and natural gas and electricity and changing the spin to positive, now it's actually beneficial to you. That's why the Shanghai takes the Oregonite one step further, because it's constantly clearing that. It's constantly moving the Oregon so you don't get depletion on the Oregonite. But it's the Oregonite purely by itself absorb stuff. I mean, I've seen the videos on YouTube. Somebody has an EMF detector, right? And they put it next to an appliance. And you see the meter reading the EMF coming off of the appliance. And then they grab a disc of Oregonite and they put it next to the appliance, and the needle on the detector practically drops to zero, because the Oregonite is literally absorbing that stuff. So that's why it gets
clear. No, well, I'm just saying basically sounds to me like there's a science or a formulation between how Oregonite and Shungite operate together. If, say, people were to use both, you know, concurrently, and then, like, you were describing all what occurred. So it has, they have to be done in a certain manner. Otherwise, you're not getting benefits. Yeah.
In my case,
Didn't you just say, Walt, that it's just as easy and better just to have the Shungite because the other stuff gets so polluted and the Shungite reverses the negative into positive?
Yeah, you don't have to clean, you don't have to clear Shungite. You don't have to clear it. You don't have to wash it. You don't need to put it. I remember getting questions of people asking me, don't you need to put it out in the sun? Because I saw on this website that every 3 months you have to put it out in the sun. I do not know who publishes that or where they're getting it from, but
the Oregonite you would have to, right? To clear it.
Right.
But not the Shungite.
Yeah, but that's why I started incorporating Sperling technology in my devices, so I wouldn't have that issue of having to clear it. It's always been clearing itself. And the Shungite does have polarity. That's when I made the Shungite resonator and the Shungite spirit spiral, I have to douse. It doesn't matter how irregular the piece of Shungite is, if you douse the shape of it, you know, you turn it around and you flip it over and you douse the anatomy of the Shungite, piece, you will get a negative, pole or Oregon polarity. You will have a negative and a positive. So when I match it to the coil, I have to connect it in series. So that way you will have the Oregon flow through the wire. And that was the first thing that I discovered when I made the resonator, is that it actually makes the Oregon flow 5 times faster. And that's why the wire cools down. It gets cold.
Neat. You did find a pattern that they can both play together.
Yeah, yeah. But you have to douse, because there's no, there's no instrument out there. I mean, there are instruments for Oregon detection, and what they tell you is how dense is the Oregon that you're detecting. If it's a little bit dense or a lot dense, but they don't tell you what the polarity is.
Well,
that's where dowsing comes in.
Well,
your body is the perfect instrument to detect these things.
Well,
yes,
have you heard of the COLER device?
Spell it.
C-O-L-E-R. German scientist, 1930s. He devised a device that created a voltage all by itself. And it was using magnets as part of the electrical path as well as the signal path. I was just reading this today in Sean's book.
Do you have the schematics?
You can look them up. They're, you know, it's publicly available. COLER, you know, I'll find it for you. I'll send you one. Let me see. You know, because there's so much synchronicity going on right now. It's just everything that I'm talking about.
Have you seen a magnetic light? They're amazing.
Magnetic light?
Oh, yeah. It's powered from magnets, just like the fluorescent light, that it's a magnet that actually powers the light.
How do you mean?
It's an amazing system.
The magnets are put under compression.
I really only noticed that I could purchase it if I wanted it and that it was high priced, so I kind of like didn't dwell.
Because it's not one of these torches that it's got a magnet that you shake up and down.
Oh, no. It's a true, no.
Uh-huh.
It'd be like the ballast, instead of it being electric, it would be magnetic.
Hans Kohler device, a free energy machine. There you go.
I'm looking at a YouTube video.
Yeah, there you go. The Magnetstrom apparat. You know, the magnetic field apparatus.
And, right, share it in chat, Walt. No, come on.
Yeah, I'll do it. There you go. so it's, the magnets in this device are used as part of, the circuit. Exactly as you've been talking about. So that's a clue. Definitely. The thing is about Kohler, he didn't really know how it worked. And he was just apparently fiddling about with it.
Sounds like the Hendershot device.
What's the Hendershot device? Let me.
Hendershot is a generator that it has no moving parts. Mm-hmm. It just uses magnetic resonance, and it gives you AC power, 120 volts AC. Oh. But I've seen a YouTube video of someone actually building one and making it work. Mm. Even Hendershot himself couldn't give you a technical explanation of why it worked. He just knew that it worked.
Well, there we go. The Hendershot Generator Do-It-Yourself Kit, which consists of, from what I can see, three very large supercapacitors, a mains socket, two transformers, three more capacitors, a nice big hank of green wire, a little reel of copper wire, and what's that? They look like ferrite rods, and some sliding device. So there must be some kind of
the sliding device is the where the magnets are mounted. And so what happens is, if you approach them, the voltage goes up. If you separate them, the voltage goes down. It's all pure resonance. It generates the voltage through that magnetic resonance. The field just bounces off of that magnet assembly.
So it's got two big bar magnets in the middle there.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going on?
I have no idea. Even Hendershot couldn't explain it very well. I can send you the instructions for it if you feel inclined to make one.
Well, it says here $495. $560 international.
I scanned the pages from the book that describes how to assemble it, but I didn't have the money at the time to get all the parts.
Yeah. What's the most expensive part? Probably the capacitors. What are they?
Yeah, that was the thing. Is those big fat capacitors.
They're not bad. 500 microfarads and 1,000 microfarads.
I don't know why Hendershot made his. I don't know if at the time, because he did this thing in the 60s. I don't know if...
Yeah. Hey, we're out of time. Anyway, thanks very much. Walt Silver, a man of many angles and many perspectives. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mona. Thank you, Noreen.
Thank
Good
you,
night,
Mona.
Everybody.
Thank you, JP Walton. It was great. Thank you.
everybody. Welcome to the Ms. Muggsy Show. I have a special show for you. My good friend and fighting partner, Ray Kozolondich, is here, and he brought his really good friend, Joe Palermo, on the air. And what we're going to be discussing is UFOlogy, looking for UFOs, what it means to have star contact, and anything else that Joe chooses to wish to tell us. So I'm going to welcome both these gentlemen on. Hi.
How you doing, Sam? This is Ray.
Good evening. This is Joe Palermo.